Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
When the state of Massachusetts legalized marijuana, it also established a social equity program designed to give individuals most impacted by the war on drugs an opportunity for training and development in the cannabis industry, as well as expedited licenses. Several years into the effort, the Massachusetts marijuana industry is booming, but few licenses are held by minorities. Now, the state has created new licenses for delivery businesses to lower some barriers for equity applicants. NewsHour Weekend Special Correspondent Kira Kay has more. This segment is part of our ongoing series, Chasing the Dream, Poverty and Opportunity in America.
It's Juneteenth in the Jamaica Plain neighborhood of Boston. The new federal holiday means a long weekend for local residents who have come to the Seed dispensary to pick up their favorite cannabis products. But Seed isn't just a dispensary, it's also a museum. Curator Niambi McIntosh is the daughter of reggae legend and cannabis activist Peter Tosh.
My father, just like many other musicians from Coolio, Snoop, Mick Jagger, James Brown, have all been arrested for cannabis possession.
The museum charts America's so-called war on drugs, that even in the last decade saw nearly four times as many black people arrested for cannabis possession.
Our country spends hundreds of thousands of dollars performing raids to this day.
This history is personal for McIntosh. Her brother died after an attack by a fellow inmate while under arrest for marijuana possession.
This is a multi-billion dollar industry, and most consumers have no idea. You know, they have the privilege to walk into any dispensary without having the faintest idea about who are the people that have sacrificed in order for this industry to exist.
The blending of cannabis business and social justice reflects a core mandate of state law. In 2016, voters approved ballot question 4, which made Massachusetts the first state to require policies to bring people disproportionately harmed by cannabis prohibition into the newly legalized industry. The state's Cannabis Control Commission requires all businesses to have a plan for positive impact on regions and communities deemed hard hit by the war on drugs. This includes recruiting employees who have a past drug conviction. Nearly 5 years on, the cannabis industry in Massachusetts is blooming, popping up in towns more known for tourism, like Gloucester with its seafaring history, which is now home to Happy Valley, a boutique operation where cannabis is cultivated on location, then harvested and processed, and sold in a space that more resembles an Apple store. South of Boston, in Brockton, Legal Greens opened in March.
There's not a lot of black businesses in Brockton, and Brockton is a majority minority city. And it was my priority for me to come into downtown purposely for me to revitalize this area because it has never been a good area.
So there's gummies.
Vanessa Jean-Baptiste is the first black woman to open a recreational dispensary on the U.S. East Coast. She was an early participant in another special state cannabis initiative, equity programs that prioritize qualified applicants for expedited licenses and even offer training for those from impacted communities wanting to get into the business.
I would not be in business without it, and it's huge for them to even do a program like that because no other state has done that before. I know people that have been killed by the war on drugs, so it's more so for me to give back to the community because I know that my community desperately needs it.
But Jean-Baptiste's story is rare. She's one of only 12 equity applicants to actually open their doors out of 257 operating licenses issued by the state. Cannabis Control Commissioner Nerys Camargo agrees the system is struggling.
The cannabis industry does not look like me. It doesn't look like a lot of the communities that have been disproportionately harmed by the failed war on drugs. We have about 4 to 5% of applicants that either are economic empowerment or social equity applicants. That's not what we intended in the beginning. It's not what the goal was.
Camargo says what's called corporate cannabis is dominating the market.
I've seen many of the big players come out and open up, right, 2 and 3 dispensaries. but we're still leaving out the little guy. We have folks that have done this well in the illicit market, and we want them to cross over, but there's no capital. There's no, you know, they don't have the access. They don't have the network.
It's funny, 10 years ago when I was arrested, I was considered the worst person around. The local paper villainized me over a very small amount of cannabis. Now, flash forward to here we are. I'm considered a young, bright entrepreneur for doing the same exact thing that I was doing 10 years ago.
Devin Alexander is who the Massachusetts law had in mind. He was arrested for marijuana possession in high school, derailing his plans of joining the Air Force. He learned quickly that even in his hometown of Quincy, he was priced out of opening a dispensary in the approved area.
It wasn't available for lease. We had to buy it outright, which would have cost us $2 to $3 million.
Then there's what's called a host community agreement. Even though cannabis is regulated by the state, the cities and towns have the ultimate say on who gets to open their doors. While municipalities can tax businesses up to 3% to offset what they see as additional burdens, like parking, extra policing, or drug abuse programs, these agreements have sometimes also asked for thousands of dollars in additional fees and donations. The mayor of Fall River was just convicted of extorting bribes in exchange for his handful of available licenses.
These towns don't have equity in mind, and they just want to go to the highest bidder. You know, if you have the money to play, you have a better chance at obtaining a host community agreement than a small funded equity applicant. Other states aren't doing this. We're the only one in the country that really give the municipalities this level of control.
If anyone's story demonstrates the potentially crippling impact of host community agreements, it is Chauncey Spencer.
This is huge.
Oh, this is only a small portion of it.
NewsHour met him 2 years ago at the storefront he was renting in anticipation of an agreement with the city of Boston. Spencer was in the first pool of state-certified priority applicants in 2018. He thought that was his ticket to success.
I'd get my license in first. I'd be first to open. And, you know, I knew that there would be crowds. I knew it would be high, you know, all this publicity. I was ready for it.
But Spencer's storefront is now an immigration office. He went bankrupt after spending $100,000 and had to give up the lease. No approval ever came.
The longer I waited, the more competition I began to get.
Just to be clear, they didn't come back to you and say, oh, you missed a form,
no,
or we need more clarification.
No, nothing.
There's a zoning issue for your location?
No.
You were paying rent?
Yes, paid rent, $5,000 a month, sitting on a location. Meanwhile, I just watched them dole out license after license after license.
In response to an investigation by the Boston Globe, city officials said they handled Spencer's application like any other and fairly. But pushed by now Mayor Kim Janey, an early proponent of cannabis legalization, the city scrapped that approvals process and created a new oversight board. But it was all too late for Spencer.
I know people who have refinanced their homes. I know folks who have lost their pensions, and I think that it's up to our legislators, it's up to us as regulators, it's also up to our mayors, our town administrators. We're going to lose the opportunity and the window will close, and Massachusetts would have done some things right and left some things out. And I think that other states in the country have watched Massachusetts and have taken from our best practices. But I think have been a little bit more progressive in some of their social equity now in terms of their funds and their programs.
The Massachusetts legislature is now considering action to extend the state requirements of equity down to the municipal level and grant oversight of levied fees to Camargo's commission. And now, new delivery licenses are being reserved only for equity applicants for at least 3 years. Delivery is less expensive to set up.
Seeing the delivery as a sector that is completely untouched and is ready for new faces and fresh blood in it made me really want to go after the delivery model instead of having the dispensary.
It's coming out of the vault and then go right into our Sally Port and load up the vans.
Devin Alexander helped lobby for that period of exclusivity and is now busy setting up plans with his partners for a 2,000-square-foot warehouse and a fleet of secure vehicles. He would also like to see an equity trust fund, something else the legislature is considering. Cannabis is still federally illegal, making banking very hard for entrepreneurs.
You see some states like Illinois and Oakland, California, they're giving their equity applicants no interest loans in the six figures. And I could tell you that goes a long way, because when you're talking to some people trying to raise capital, and he had low interest loans, and you show them, okay, I just need this much more to get to the next level, you would see a lot more equity applicants getting through the process.
Finally, some cities are taking their own initiative, like Cambridge, which has a special period right now just for equity entrepreneurs. Chauncey Spencer is now trying there. He has his eye on a new space in a fast-developing area. It's currently a pet store. The location holds a great deal of symbolism.
People ask me, why do I feel the need to come to Cambridge? And I says, you know, I do have a relationship with Cambridge. That relationship is that they helped me in that jail right there. I feel as if they should be able to allow me to become a successful businessman in the same space.
When you first came to look at your new potential storefront down the street here, did you do a double take?
Oh, absolutely. I did. I said, no one's going to believe this. I said, no one's going to believe this. I can't wait to tell this story.
Still, it's a hard process. We went along with Spencer on his crucial permitting hearing at Cambridge City Hall. He was grilled on everything from window tinting to trash pickup.
How do you plan on not overwhelming the existing parking?
And during public comments, a local community group complained Spencer hadn't consulted with them. The board made this a requirement before they would grant approval. He had that meeting and has now been given his local permit. But he's starting from scratch. New architecture plans he drew himself and a fresh start at fundraising. In a bittersweet decision, he accepted a development grant from a major cannabis company and hopes they may offer him a supplier agreement. He's excited and grateful for the help, but realizes his current dreams will look different from his early ones.
During a recent push from some House Republicans to encourage their supporters to get vaccinated, a reporter asked a pair of questions to one of the party's rising stars, Georgia Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Two questions. Have you yourself gotten vaccinated, and do you disagree with the Republican whip?
Well, your first question is a violation of my HIPAA rights. You see, with HIPAA rights, we don't have to reveal our medical records, and that also involves our vaccine records.
Well, not quite. That's actually not at all how HIPAA works. But because this landmark privacy law is quickly approaching meme status, we're going to talk about what HIPAA is, what it isn't, and how it's being used as a political prop. And since it's Monday, Jessica Levinson is here with us, Loyola Law School professor and our regular legal eagle. Hello.
Michelle, hello.
Well, it's great to have you. So first off, give us a quick primer on HIPAA, or formally the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act.
Rolls off the tongue. It's really strange that we have an acronym for it. So it is a 1996 law. It's a Clinton era law, and it's in part designed to protect our privacy regarding some of our health related information. But it does not at all cover what Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene talks about. It prevents health plans, healthcare clearinghouses, and basically other healthcare providers from revealing your medical information.
So, okay, let's break down then a little bit what she said. That first question, not a violation of her HIPAA rights to ask her whether or not she's been vaccinated.
Not only not a violation of her HIPAA rights, but let's think about whether or not she could possibly be correct. If she's right, that means members of the press cannot ask sitting members of Congress about their health or about health-related information. Now, there's another violation here we should be thinking about, and that's a First Amendment violation. We simply don't have a system of laws in our country where we say to the press, you're not allowed to ask these questions. Again, she can say, I'm not answering, but it's in no way a violation of HIPAA for the question to be asked. And it likely would be a violation of the First Amendment if you weren't allowed to ask.
So what rights do we have under HIPAA?
The rights that we have are basically the rights of telling healthcare providers, our insurance companies, not to provide our confidential or medical information to others. But it doesn't prevent us from saying anything. It's really about the people who provide us with our healthcare and ensuring that they're not going to go tell our employers or our friends, oh, did you know that Jessica has, you know, X, Y, and Z? This explains so much.
So what about employers, though? Does HIPAA prevent them from asking for our health information? Because this is going to be a huge issue as we move forward into the realm of vaccine mandates. I mean, already you've seen Disney and other companies saying that they want to either mandate proof of vaccine or subject employees to regular testing.
Huge issue. And no, it does not. In fact, our employers can ask us a whole host of health-related questions. The real issue here is that if you say, I'm not vaccinated, then employers can dip their toe into some legally questionable waters if they say, well, why not? Because then you could potentially get into, if somebody says, well, I have a good faith religious belief, or I have a disability. Employers can push too far if they ask why. But let's for a minute think about all of the situations where employers absolutely can ask us about our health. Think about the airline pilot. The airline company has to make sure that she has good vision. There's a whole host of information that employers can say, we'd like to know. And, you know, to get to your question, absolutely, employers have been, will, and can ask about vaccine status. Now, you don't have to answer, but then your employers can treat you as if you're not vaccinated and basically put you in a different bucket to protect the rest of us.
In Florida, the pandemic continues to exact its price. New cases are rising, and a record number of COVID patients are hospitalized, more than 11,000. All this ramps up pressure on employers trying to keep workers safe. NPR's Yuki Noguchi reports on one firm's struggles.
George Bouet works on a palm tree-lined street close to Fort Lauderdale's beaches, where COVID-19 transmission runs especially high.
Well, we're the epicenter.
Yet resistance to vaccination has also been relatively stiff. That is sowing division within the ranks of Stiles, where Bouet is vice president of human resources. The company's 260 employees work in teams to design, construct, and manage office buildings. Bouet estimates 40% of the company's staff have yet to vaccinate.
We've always had a very trusting culture. What's happening now is there's a level of distrust as to who's vaccinated, who's not. It has been really taxing, just appeasing the two extreme groups of the overly concerned and the overly unconcerned.
Across the U.S., many employers are grappling with similar dynamics, trying to maintain safety in workplaces polarized over vaccination. So far, only a fraction have mandated vaccines. In Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis banned businesses and government from requiring proof of COVID-19 vaccination. Bouet doesn't think his company would have gone that route anyway. It's hard enough trying to recruit workers. Instead, he tries to urge vaccination in a way that won't alienate workers opposed to it. But that, too, isn't easy. For example, he recently surveyed employees to gauge how many would get their shots if a vaccinator came on site.
I got a whopping 3 individuals.
He thinks some workers may be waiting until the vaccines win full approval from the Food and Drug Administration instead of just for emergency use. But
I do think there's a significant percentage that won't get vaccinated no matter what. I don't think they could be convinced otherwise.
And so, he says, the emotionally charged division seen in the real world spill over into the workplace. The conflict isn't necessarily overt. Workers vent to managers or to him about their worries, like having asthma or an immunocompromised family member.
It has been my toughest job in human resources ever.
Bouet tells him it's okay to ask whether a colleague is vaccinated. But he knows from experience it can be extremely awkward.
It's impacting a very critical glue within our culture. Those that are vaccinated who feel they've taken all the precautions feel resentful to the unvaccinated, especially if the unvaccinated don't wear a mask, because that's the worst combination.
Managing masking policies alone has been a huge headache. Bouet says the company's policy is to follow CDC guidelines.
But the challenge is that this thing has changed constantly because the CDC issues new guidance, and we have to be quick on our feet.
Like last week, when the CDC renewed calls for universal masking indoors in regions where COVID transmission is high. Each time guidelines change, Bouet sends out another email. The problem is, the nuances aren't always clear. Like, does a vaccinated employee whose child was exposed at school still need to quarantine under the new rules?
People refer to the guidelines that existed previously and say, well, what about this?
It's hard, he says, helping people navigate this ever-changing landscape. But George Bouet says he realizes he's not alone. Employers worldwide are in the same boat. Yuki Noguchi, NPR News.
untiljustice@gmail.com. So people wrote in this week. Number one, this is kind of important, so please listen up if you have suggestions. We have a younger listener. He has written in for years. This brilliant young scholar, he's written in, he's called in, all of the above. His mom has done a fantastic job trying to share counter-racism concepts with him from a very young age, which I think is, I mean, talk about genius. Bravo to attempted counter-racist parents. So this is his email. Listen up. Greetings, Gus. I'm emailing you because I have decided to get an apartment in Boston, my school area. Pause for Charles Stewart. The lease for what I was looking at starts in January, and I'm living with three other people, two white, one mixed. Now, I would have questions there in terms of what do you mean mixed? Does this person have a white parent and a non-white parent? Does this person have two non-white parents? Like, what are you talking about? Mr. Fuller does recommend in the Word God not using the word mixed. Anyway, these are people who I have known for more than a year, and they all asked me to consider. The apartment is close to school, and I know the other students who live in that same area. The realtor for this apartment sent us a video of the place. It was very messy, but he explained why, and it made sense. My question is, what do you think I should do as far as preparing? This is my first time moving into an apartment. I lived in a dorm before this. How should I go about protecting myself and keeping myself aware of my surroundings along with the people I live with? Any suggestions will definitely be appreciated. Wow. So I got this email. The first thing I was thinking was kind of, wow, oh, the Rona? Really? I don't know, you know, what the school situation is going to be like in Boston come January, or even next month, forget January, even 2 days from now. But I know with so many of the school situations, they're doing the remote learning and have talked about how difficult it has been to do on-campus learning for many obvious reasons. So I guess number one, just kind of paying attention to the news and trying to be as informed as possible about what the recommendations and what the latest guidelines are with regards to staying safe from the COVID-19 virus. We just have no idea what things could look like by January. So that would be one. And specifically to what's happening in the Boston area, because it can be so different just depending on the region that you're in. So I would definitely be paying a lot of attention to what's happening in Boston and any updates for your school. It seems the campus newspapers sometimes have been really great outlets for information detailing the virus, because sometimes universities haven't been forthcoming. So I'd be checking the school newspaper, see if they have any details on outbreaks, campus safety, that sort of thing. In terms of the residents, as long as you're sure that the place is going to be clean by the time that you all are ready to, you know, move in and such. Living with two white people, not just one. And I don't know about this mixed person. If this, you know, are we talking about someone who looks like President Obama? What are we talking about exactly? Is this someone who could maybe pass away? But two white people, I would, particularly with the Rona, but even not, I would have concerns about being able to secure my belongings. There was the college incident from just a few years back where it was a black female and her white female roommate had been terrorizing her and taking her like toothbrush and things and putting them in the toilet and then putting it back and all this other just really terroristic behavior that had been going on for a while. I think it even made the young lady sick, and they ultimately prosecuted this white woman, I believe. But those type of incidents are not that's not a one-time thing. That's not an anomaly. So I think it would be very important in terms of respecting space so that you know you have a secure location for your items. I don't know if there's a lock, like if you have your own private bedroom. If so, I would see if you could get maybe a lock installed on your room. I've heard many reports in those type of environments because you might be able to secure your, like, bedding area, right, and your computer, clothes, things of that nature. But the food area is generally common, and that sort of, you know, playing with people's food and things. We even have folks who talk about that in the workplace. So that would be a concern. Like, I don't know how well you know these people, but I've also heard of many instances of that, of food being tampered with and that sort of thing. Just, I would, if you know these folks, great, but I would still, it would be great maybe to have a meeting when you all first get there in January, just to go over safety guidelines about the Rona, just to cover basics, house guests, things of that nature. If this was 2018, nobody cares. If you bring two people over, you were going to play video games, watch, you know, football, whatever it is, no big deal. Now, I would have maybe a meeting with everybody and go over that, just so that everybody can be safe, try to nip things in the bud that might be a problem. Guests, security for personal belongings, cleaning tends to be a big one. Again, I don't know if you know these folks, but just some of the basics. So that you don't have major surprises. I don't know how long you all would be living together, but to be with three other college-age students and two of them are white, like, I could definitely see potential problems, and especially alcohol. If these folks drink, oh, man. I mean, that I've said that for years and years and years. I don't know if they drink or not, but wow, I would not want to be in an environment where there's going to be anything unsafe, criminal, disruptive in an environment where I live because we decided to drink and, you know, came up with a new set of pranks or things to do. And so now the freezer is in the backyard, that type of a thing. The alcohol-related hijinks among college-age white students, you know, would take up a year's worth of programming. So I try to get that straight as well. If you know these folks, maybe they don't drink, maybe they're sober, great, nip that in the bud. But those are things I wouldn't want to be surprised about that I'd maybe talk about house meeting as soon as everything starts up. If folks have any suggestions, if we have any parents, if you have offspring and they're maybe a little bit older, and they've already done the college thing. So you've already, you know, done this speech. I've seen how this goes. I've seen the pitfalls and all the rest of it. Whammo! This is the counter-racist speech that you give to children who are going to school about the roommate situation. I'm rooming with some white people maybe, housemates, and all of that. If folks have recommendations, or this is what I said to my child before they embarked on all of that, please share. Again, I don't have offspring, so you know I don't have any direct experience with that speech.
Bay Area Mom, do you have a comment here? You should be with us. Oops, wait a minute. 1 second. Yeah. All right. Bay Area Mom, she'll wrap us up. Bay Area Mom.
Hi. Thank you for allowing me to speak. Real quick. So this isn't mine. This is the Bay Area Scholar. So I just got off the phone with him. Livid. Because everything that was supposed to happen happened. So 2 weeks ago, Caucasian roommate, 2 months ago, white girlfriend comes over. She comes in. This is my love of my life. I love her. She's in the home. She goes to, some kind of festival. So there's a festival call in Florida called, I can't read what I wrote. But it was a festival in Florida, and she went to it, some kind of music festival. And the white girl, 2 weeks ago, she gave strep throat to the white boy, the love of her life. She gave him strep throat, just met her 2 months ago. So now the boy is scared, my son. So he takes all his supplements and does his stuff. So the lady comes back from Florida, and she's sick. So instead of going straight home, she goes to their home, stays with him because this is the love of my life. And she tested positive for COVID. So one of the white boys sent an email to my son's job because they work at the same job. And I think to the school, however it went, now he can't go to work. He's got to stay in the house and he's got to test until he tests positive. Negative. So, he was furious. And we don't have anything to worry about because we're vaccinated. You know, everybody's fine. Are you mad at me? He's like, oh, man, no. But he was really livid. So I said, you just make sure you meditate, you breathe, you do some yoga, do some of your Taekwondo stretch, do whatever you got to do, take a walk, keep that. Don't touch nothing. Keep that place clean. And I told you. And so he's like, oh, my goodness, lessons learned. Tacky, trifling, terrorist. What did he say, tacky, trifling, terroristic? Tacky, trashy, terroristic. That's what he said. And he was serious. He's like, Mommy, he brings Aunt Raggedy Ann in here. And she comes and they said it was, they just knew it was going to be me. I was like, yeah, you're going to bring Ebola. So that's my workplace racism for the Bay Area scholar. And I will mute my line and thank you for allowing me the couple of minutes.
Woo! I'm wounded. That's not funny, like, at all. Health and safety is, you know, with all of the death and suffering, like, the black female that I was talking about at the beginning, like, she was talking about how the terrorism she experienced on the job was impacting her health. And then we heard Irie, back pain, Supan twist. Told you, very easy one. Lovely. You could do banana pose too. That's a nice, like, side stretch, always feels really nice. Happy baby is a nice one for the back. Can rock back and forth and get a nice low back massage. Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, August 6, 2021. So I have been told this is our weekly broadcast, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. Hopefully, we'll be able to share a few suggestions on the best way to try to solve problems without creating new problems in the workplace. Always our goal. Man, with this week especially, well, really the entire last year and a half or so, but I'd say especially this week, so much has been discussed with workplace racism. In fact, last week for our workplace racism, neutralizing workplace racism segment, we had so much commentary at the end that we really didn't even get to examine some of the reports that people made right at the conclusion of the broadcast. One of them being our Bay Area mom talking about the situation with her son, our Bay Area scholar. That was right literally as we were about to wrap up. So that's where we kind of started there this week. But let me give out the number and then we'll go over the reports really quick. The number is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Man, let's see. The audio segments that we heard, just try to get through them quickly so I can get to our final segment from last week. So much of it is revolving around COVID-19. I guess they did have the segment about the cannabis entrepreneurships in Massachusetts and some of the other places. All I can say is, being here in Seattle, Washington, cannabis has been legal. Recreational cannabis, as they call it, has been legal here since, I believe it was 2012 when they started all that. So about a decade, and they've had the exact same reports hear about very, very few black people. Now, they don't say black and brown people then. They don't say people of color. They say black people specifically. Very few black people are involved, and they give a lot of the same lame excuses in lots of the different states, California and other areas where cannabis, recreational cannabis, has been legalized. It is exactly the same. And it's not like this is new. Like, they've been doing it since, as I said, for about 10 years. So, I mean, everybody, if they were really serious about saying, hey, we're not going to just let white people stack up all this money now that we've said cannabis is legitimate, at least in a number of states, and then all the black people that we prosecuted and Khalif Browdered all over these years, we're not going to do that. They could have figured out that by now if they wanted to and done a much better job. We shouldn't be 10 years on hearing these type of stories from black people who want to be entrepreneurs. They don't want to be criminals and lawbreakers, and then all the graft and extortion and bribery and all the rest of it, cronyism, standard white supremacy racism. And even in that segment, they used the metaphor. They said, well, we might have to do some lowering of the bar, meaning changing the guidelines to allow more black people to enter the business. Why is it lowering the bar as though these are some backwards, half attempted entrepreneurs who don't really know and they can't really compete on an even playing field with the rest of the white entrepreneurs? No. We're in a system of racism, white supremacy, and they were deliberately excluded from all this. So we're not lowering the bars. This is compensatory, what we're doing to correct a wrong. Lots of different ways that it could be worded, not lowering the bar. Undeserved. See, I always do that. You affirmative action, niggers. Not deserving of anything. Let's see. Most of the segments, as I said, talking about the COVID situation, and the HIPAA, do you have to reveal, saying that, yes, it's legal, that people can ask. I think we had one of our listeners who a few weeks back had said, hey, my policy, I just say standard. I do not discuss anyone's vaccination status in the workplace. Thank you kindly. Or have your own version of that. But just to say that, not with an attitude, you're not being aggressive or anything. Just, hey, I have decided I'm not going to discuss vaccination status in the workplace. I know it can be contentious and people have different thoughts on it, so I'm not even going down that route. Do what you do. I'll do the same. We'll hopefully all stay safe. Thank you kindly. Excellent. That's what I advocate, and to not get into dialogues about all of this in the workplace, like, ooh, this is definitely one you want to be remembering. Other people can hear this conversation. You have no idea what their view is. For, against the vaccine and all the rest of it. So I would not even discuss it in the workplace, white people or non-white people. Way too contentious of an issue. Let's just keep it on workplace. And let me make sure I know policy and procedure for myself. All of that included, as I said, like, wowee, to get to the final segment. Where first we heard our Bay Area scholar wrote in to kind of give us the details of this arrangement. So he wrote us at the end, well, not quite the end. It was like autumn of 2020. This is like October-ish. So the latter part of 2020, he wrote in and said, hey, yeah, I'm going to have these three roommates and one of them mixed. Two of them are so-called white. Maybe three of them are white. And we already talked about the Rona and visitors and all the rest, and it's going to be great and learning experience. I remember he said that when he started. He said that I just view it as a learning experience. And his mom be like, oh, my goodness, and I don't approve. And it's so far because she's in California. So then him being all the way in Massachusetts and blah, 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 and all the rest of it. So we hear that in October. And I said then, like, man, maybe we can get him on the program for an update, you know, like once or twice over the year, hear how things are going. Wow. So we got the update last week from his mom. Yikes. They don't honor the visitor policy. Have some white woman over at the house. She's gone to one of these festivals down in Florida. Good old Ron DeSantis, hopeful for 2024. She comes back. She's got Ebola, strep throat, like SARS. Who knows? Like all of this cough. Had a great time in Florida. All the rest of it. And so she doesn't, as I said, she doesn't come back and go to her residence. She comes back and comes to hang out at the house with Bay Area Scholar and such, you know. So he's had to navigate all of that and getting tested and disruption to his whole safety and abode, place where he rests. If anything, I said, man, this is so critical because it's almost that time of year being autumn, when folks will be beginning college, university again. You should have a very serious conversation if you are sending your daughter, your son, off to university, freshman, even if you're sending them off as a senior. You should make sure you have a very serious dialogue around, hey, taking it serious, are you going to be living with a white person or white people, plural? Man, the dangers, do you have your own refrigerator? Like, what's the protocol if someone gets sick? Are these folks going to be drinking and partying and having over all their friends and all the rest who've gone to all these different festivals? They went to the rugged Burning Man, even though they told them not to come, and they went to Florida to go party, and now they want to come and hang out, touch all over your food, lay in your bed and all the rest of it. Like, have a serious conversation. If you have offspring, they're going to be someplace this coming fall, because it is not, I mean, this is one you do not want to. Whoa, you've got what? Who has been staying here? We got to go get tested, and then you might end up having to be quarantined and missing class. And I mean, just wow. Like, you want to take your health seriously. Underline boldface print. And the whole college situation is, I mean, these are a lot of folks talking about college age students, traditionally aged, like 18 to 25 group. And a lot of white people in that mix. These folks do not exactly have a reputation for prudent, reasonable decision making. Not exactly. And that hasn't really been exhibited in mass throughout the past 19 months. So all of that to say, like, wow, it would be super serious. Like, this might even have to be the type of thing where I'm already thinking in advance. Am I going to have to, like, bail on this living situation? Talk to the landlord in advance. If someone gets contaminated, if they get COVID-19, hey, we might need to get out of here. Like, let's talk about that up front, because nothing is more important than health. Wow. Just wow. Number again is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943, pound, press star 61, if you would like to participate. I don't have offspring, so I'll only say, number one, you really just want to plant seeds and make sure that your offspring have access to accurate information and that you have spoken with them about racism and sexual abuse, so that they know the basics and they have access to that information and more when they decide they need it. That is super important, so that they're not hearing about these concepts or this problem for the first time when this type of event happens, which high likelihood that something like this could happen. But you just want to make sure that they have that information, that you all have a great rapport, so that they feel comfortable coming to talk to you about these type of things and to get suggestions on how to proceed, and that they've already been exposed to counter-racist concepts, so that they're not stumbling and fumbling. They already have at least like an elementary understanding of, oh yeah, this is what Dad, I think Thomas in New York was saying. They're like, oh yeah, Dad sits around and talks about white people all the time. I see. This is exactly what he was talking about. Over his mom, this is exactly what she was talking about. Like, yeah, I get it. I thought she was just crazy and hated white people, but I get it. I'm starting to. There you go. Email is untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. We can keep it anonymous if you have commentary and are concerned about being identified and all the rest of it. We can read if you have suggestions, questions, whatever. We'll make sure to include your commentary on the broadcast. Again, I will encourage, make sure you don't wait till the last minute. If you have thoughts to share, make sure that we have time to discuss, ponder your thoughts and observations. Don't wait till the last 5 minutes in the broadcast. Let's see. I will double check. I'll read one email and then we'll nab some of the folks who dialed in. Broadcast again, not for spectators. Let's see. One email, untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. Let's see. And if we have folks with updates while I get at my email, I talked about the hybrid work situation. Whether people, one, make sure you're asking, work from home if you can, avoid the commute and all the craziness. It might even be a group thing. We had some folks who had success with that. They got the whole collective to go in and ask, and they got, I think, 2 work from home days, come to the office 3. Outstanding. But at least ask. They can certainly deny. That's always the case. But at least ask for something that is constructive and might even help with your personal health and safety. All righty. Let's see. Workplace racism. All righty. Let's see. Email number 1. One of our investors, also a vegan, plant-based eaters. Love it, love it, love it. All right. I wanted to report that I was granted 1 day to work from home. Now, I'd be pissed about that, but if I had been working in the office 5 days a week, and now I got at least 1, that is an improvement. But I would rather work from home all days a week, 3 days a week, 4 days a week. Race soldiers, give me 1. I'll take my 1 for the time being. She continues, the director, white female, stated that this will be time limited. The whole clinic staff will be expected to come in daily in the fall. I also said that it would definitely help with childcare. She said, I understand, and granted the time off. Yeah. She did ask how I would spend the time at home. Uh-oh. Let's see what she says. And I explained that I will be doing administrative work and notes on the cases I'm seeing. Love it. By the way, there are some staff members who are allowed to work from home time that cannot perform their jobs from home at all. These are non-white people, so I don't want to question her about them since I don't want her to take their time away. Bravo. But I mean, that's still something that I would note, even though these are other victims of racism, and if they've, you know, been able to work things out, great. But I would just make an observation that it seems like, and I mean, that's frequently the case in the way. In fact, that was another one from the conclusion of last week. A caller in Florida always said, man, they got some white people. He said he took photographic evidence. It looks like they got some white people here that are being allowed to work from home because they might have, you know, been tested positive or contact tracing, like maybe they were in close proximity. Whereas the non-white people, got to use your PTO. Can't work from home. That sort of discrepancy, which is illegal, due process and equal protection under the law, 14th Amendment, I would be making note of. I love it. As she said, I'm not trying to mess up these victims. And, you know, if they got a cushy thing going, ride it until the wheels fall off. Just saying, if you can make an exception for them, you could do this for moi or others as well. Continues. I also heard about the mandate from the governor of New. Oh my lord, the governor Cuomo! Can you believe it? I perform direct patient care. This means that I would be under more pressure to get vaccinated. I am planning to get the vaccine. I'm still pretty hesitant. I will let you know if and when I get it. New York. That's one of the places that they've been talking about. I think even. The mayor of New York, Bill de Blasio, Cowbell, had said he wasn't going to do a mask mandate because they want people to get vaccinated. That's the key to the city. Vaccine, vaccine, vaccine. They've had more and more places saying, got to be vaccinated to even get in here. If you're not vaccinated, then get on out of here. Get on down the road. That type of a thing. So will probably be even more pressure for employees, especially if you're in any sort of medical field. Ooh. Continues, my report for the past 2 weeks, the non-white female returned from her vacation. I informed her that I was granted the work from home option. She asked the director, and she was also granted the option to work from home. The white female nurse practitioner started to complain that she never got the option to work from home. The non-white female nurse states that she, white female nurse practitioner, blocked her from having a work from home day. I wasn't working there when this happened, but I believe the non-white female. I do as well. And see that sort of nonsense where she's going to sit around and, I'm a victim. Why are they letting all these colored people get days off? I want to work from home too. She could have just went and asked like anybody else, and I'm sure she knows that. I'm sure she's very aware none of these black people are in charge. They don't get to decide whether you get to work from home. They don't even get to decide whether they themselves work from home. She already knows all that. She just want to go through her little act and get some attention. And then I love it. The black female. Susan, do you remember you were the one that made it so that I couldn't even work from home? Negros, I hate them all. And then she goes by over there. Come on. Come on. Come on. Continuing. 2 weeks ago, I made an error at work due to going off code. I was being rushed to assist a patient by a non-white female coworker. This person's role is to assist and support patients. The patient was also rushing and pressuring her. Thankfully, the error was not major, as per the director and the doctor of this patient, both white females. I spoke to the director about this during my supervision. I asked her, how do we reduce interruption in the nursing station? Love the questions. And how do we also reduce pressuring the nurse to rush through her process? She suggested that nurse that's not in the nursing station sits in the front desk area. I told her that doesn't make sense since we have two people in the front desk area. She then suggested that we sit in the chart room and try to ease drop. What? I told her that still doesn't make sense. I agree. I suggested that staff can call the RN's office or email us. The RN at her desk can relay the message to the RN in the nursing station when the station is quiet. She agreed. I emphasized that we need to focus on the safety, there's my word, safety, of our patients. It definitely helps to have a quieter nursing station and less people coming in and out. I also prefer to be in my office because I do not want to be around people unnecessarily. Isn't COVID still a problem? Hallelujah. Like, unless you all have way more information than I do and you're medical professionals, I thought the Rona was still an issue. Maybe we should avoid having a bunch of people bunched up in a tight area, sniffing and breathing on each other and touching and all the rest. Like, let's space this out. We got 21st century technology, right? This past week has been error-free. I stuck to my workplace code. I plan to continue to find ways to improve my code at work. Hey. Bravo. I love it. Doesn't get any better than that to have a code. And I said that too, as opposed to sitting around and fussing at other non-white people. And you did this wrong. You did that wrong. You didn't say this right. You didn't say that right. The person that you know about the best, I mean, you know, every single error, miscue, all of it is yourself. So if you really want to nitpick about somebody not following code, get that mirror out. And hey, you can be phenomenal because you know better than anybody else. Like, man, that did not go the way I wanted. Like, man, next time I'm gonna do something better. Next time, I'm going to say something different. And even this time, she got the white people to help. I'm going to ask them questions. Now, a part of me not being on my code in this was, hey, I got rushed. And that happens to everybody. You're not able to think as well. People start rushing you and coming and interrupting you. You're trying to sit here and do this, and you're focused on that. Hey, did you see the game last night? Wow, these Olympics are crazy. You going to watch the game tonight? And they ask you all this irrelevant, or even if they ask you something that is relevant, but it's just having other people come in and distract you and talking about nonsense and all the rest of it. Like, hey, let's cut all of that down. What can we do to reduce some of the traffic in this area? And she's coming up with goofy suggestions. Use logic to come up with suggestions that will help solve problems without creating new problems. If you can do that in the workplace, sometimes even suspected racists will have to say, yeah, that is logical. That will help to solve some problems. Don't think it'll create any new problems. Yeah, that sounds like it'll work. Just following logic. It has its own little inertia. Just going the logical way. And safety, I love it. Any time that you can use safety, that a part of what I'm doing here is trying to solve problems and improve safety. Like, it doesn't get any better than that. Like, you can have the little songs in the background. Like, that is spectacular. And that's the one. It's spectacular because who is going to stand up? Safety? Why are we trying to improve safety? That's stupid. Who's going to stand up and say that? Use logic. Promote safety. Like, that is music in the workplace. Use logic. Promote safety. We'll get to the other emails as we go. Again, now, if we have attempted parents, you have offspring, if they're headed to the university college setting this fall, like, oh, ye, have an extensive conversation about expectations, safety, that word again, if they're going to be rooming up with white people, like, man, talk to your children. You do not want any unpleasant surprises, and have them prepared, especially if they don't really take racism serious. If they're of the opinion, hey, I've got white friends and all the rest, and I've gone to school with them for a long time, and you're just an old fuddy-duddy and all the rest of it. That might be one. You don't want them to learn, as they say, the hard way. Bay Area scholar, his mom, I don't think she was exactly sitting around cracking up laughing like, oh man, Raggedy Ann's gonna contaminate all of you. I told you. I tried to. And then that was not quite her attitude, because you don't want to see your child die, right? So this is not one that you just want to sit back and, ha ha ha, I told you. You didn't want to listen. They say, what is it? Hard head make a soft hind parts. No, that is not the conversation on this one, especially if they end up getting quarantined. You have to go get them and all the rest of it. So yeah, this is one that you want to be really serious, and hopefully they take it serious. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Again, hopefully folks are not spectating and or waiting until the very end to get in their commentary. Folks are still doing a little spectating, I see. That loud. Last week, we did get to the end and all that, but it wasn't necessarily a lot of spectating. We had, you know, participation and all that, so it wasn't that per se. But, man, let's make sure we are not hanging out with 5 minutes to go and then having lots of folks chiming in to say, oh, yes, this happened. I'll get in one more email while folks are, you know, straggling or getting their thoughts together. This is female victim of racism. She writes in, let's see, former contract tracer. Since getting terminated, I found out that the managers were advised to purposely give us something outlandish to do just so they can micromanage us. I remember she was saying that they were like giving them written assignments and essays and things that had absolutely nothing to do with the work that they were doing, and was not even being assigned by other supervisors to their staff. So let's see, wherever. Something as unpredictable as the pandemic wasn't something anyone could really manage. So instead of providing help when we needed it, they just berated us and made us do unnecessary things based on the orders of the white people in charge. That's what a whole lot of things come down to. The orders, whims, it seems, sometimes, of the white people in charge. They could offer no help because no one knew what they were doing or what was going on. So instead, they hired multiple managers to cause issues out of nothing. It's sadistic, but then again, I am not a white person. Me either. And yeah, I just, from what she shared consistently, it just seemed like lots of confusion, not really being clear about this is what we're doing, and just random opportunities to fuss at or write someone up, berate them about minor paperwork issues that were not consistent, that were not even being done amongst the different teams. So moving on to better things, this didn't seem like a career type position, anything. I think this was like a temporary type thing. So get your coins while you're there, freshen up the resume and keep it moving. Hopefully this is not like a major disruption as you're moving along path. Hopefully this wasn't something that you were majorly depending on for resources, just, you know, using this to get through as we try to make it through this pandemic, as they say. The email again is untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. Let us know if you have thoughts, observations, if you figured out some things that work well in your workplace. Certainly let us know if, you know, what is the dialogue, the conversation, because that was one I wanted to talk about last week, too. What is the dialogue in your place of business where you work around the vaccines, the masks? Are they taking it serious? Is this, you know, hey, that's last year's news. I'm not masking anymore. We're moving on to something else. Like, you know, just what is the environment? Is this a place where you're feeling pressured to be vaccinated? Or are they, you know, one of the ones that is a lot less stringent about all of this? Let us know and, you know, how it's been navigating the workplace setting. If you have been fortunate enough, you can work from home either some of the time or quite a bit of the time or whatever it is. Let us know that, too. And again, if we have folks, take advantage. Ask if you can, if it's possible. You sit at a desk on a computer, that's something you could do at home, on a boat, in a park, whatever. At least see if you can request. You can set the bar high, see if you can get 4 days at home, 5 days at home, all of them. They might only give you one. That's better than what you had. At least ask. In my opinion, they keep saying that employees have, or workers, employees, yeah, have a lot more power right now than before. If that's true, try to use it in a constructive manner. Let's see. All righty. Miss C, non-Clemson grad. One, both. They should be with us. We'll nab other folks as I see hands. Oh, non-Clemson grad.
My wife is away visiting her brother in California for the next couple of days. So it's just me here in the lovely state of South Carolina. But I do have a couple things to say. Like when it comes to the COVID thing, at one point I was definitely working from home before my employer called everyone back into the building. But as COVID cases were going down, they started to, you know, lessen up the the mask wearing requirements. So for example, if you were vaccinated, you didn't have to wear a mask. If you were not vaccinated, you still have to wear your mask. But I don't think it was really heavily enforced. You know, the managers will come around and ask you if you had your vaccination and your proof of vaccination, but they wouldn't go into questions like why or why not if you chose not to. They would simply ask if you were vaccinated and they would leave it at that. And then, you know, if you were vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask. If you were not, you have to wear a mask. But with the uptake of coronavirus cases, everyone has to wear a mask now around the building, whether you're vaccinated or not. And for the most part, there's not really any conversations about COVID, at least about COVID or vaccination status or anything like that. People come in, they do their job. So I guess I'm pretty lucky along those lines. And then, of course, aside from that, of course, me and my wife, we teach dance. So this was very interesting. Last weekend, we did a quinceañera event. And for people who might not be familiar, it's like a coming-of-age party for a teenage girl of Hispanic origin. And so with the clients. On the day of the quinceañera, we were there, orchestrating the event to make sure everything went smoothly for their event. And this was interesting. The girl who was turning, whose party it was for, her brother was there. She had an older brother, and she was dancing with her older brother, just like she was dancing with her dad as well, too. She had a stepfather and a father. And One of the things that was very interesting, so this is one of those things that come in that cause a lot of confusion when it comes to Hispanic people. Are they white? Are they black? You see them, some of them have a bit of tan to them and stuff like that. So anyway, I was rehearsing with the sister and the brother because she had a really big dress on. I wanted to make sure they were still able to dance comfortably, even though her dress was really big and kind of in the way. So we're in the dressing room, and the sister sees the brother, and the brother got his hair cut earlier that day in the morning because I saw him at the same barber that I went to because he was in town from Florida. And he walks into the dressing room. His hair is slicked back, and his sister says to him, "You look scary." And then the brother responds, "Your mama, my N-word." And I didn't know what to think or say at that moment. You would have seen them, the two, the brother and sister. They were, I would say, around the lighter-skinned hue. But, you know, when it comes to Hispanic, you know, how do they identify, right? This is very interesting because, you know, statistically speaking, if you look at census records, at least two-thirds of Hispanics in the country identify as white. But they at least pretend otherwise. And the place where the event was being held, I was talking to the event venue owner, and they rent the space from a property owner, who I assume is white because this is South Carolina. And one of the things he told me, even as a Hispanic man, he is unable to buy property to run his business. He has to rent property from white people because white people only ever sell to white people. But if you look at this man, outside of his accent and the fact that his first language is Spanish, I would have a hard time telling that he was a Hispanic person. I would assume he was just another white person. So that was very interesting. And then something, this is probably happening in everybody's state right now, but here, particularly in South Carolina, something called redistricting is happening. And what that means is that it's the drawing of election lines on all levels, from your city or town seats to your county to your state reps, all the way up to your U.S. House reps. And these are public meetings, and people get to go in and, you know, say their piece about what they think redistricting, how it should happen, and rules. People have their issues with it. But what's interesting is some of the things that people say while they're going and to talk about redistricting. So I wrote down two of them in particular. There was a white woman who said, "I'm a white woman talking and getting the right to vote and wearing white as a symbol of purity." I found that language in itself to be very interesting because I didn't understand what that had to do with election districts or redistricting, but she was wearing white and she also said something about it being a symbol of purity. I did not understand the reference. And then another woman from a neighboring county, she talked about a white woman made it a religious conviction to run against a state rep, a current state rep, I believe, who wouldn't vote to take down the Confederate flag after Dylan Storm Roof killed non-black people in a church in the Charleston area. And, you know, apparently my friend, he told me that a significant amount of the people who decided to vote to keep the Confederate flag up here in South Carolina, even though eventually I believe it did come down, were people who lived in the upstate region of the state of South Carolina, which means the northern part of the state. And this woman who said it was her religious conviction to run against this particular elected official, and, you know, this is more than 5 years ago, said that this was the number one reason she chose to run against her elected official because he voted not to take down the Confederate flag. And to me, this is, of course, a white woman. I'm going to assume maybe a liberal. I could be incorrect. But I find it interesting that white people find it so problematic that another white person voted to or not to take down the Confederate flag. And this would be the number one reason that you would run against someone. Like, there's not maybe more important issues, you know, having to do with people's lives, like, you know, access to jobs, access to food, good food, and, you know, things that actually have a bearing on someone's immediate life outside of a symbol like the Confederate flag. And with that, I will mute my line.
Crosswalks. How about that? Sidewalk in a bike lane. How about that? South Carolina has a pretty high pedestrian fatality rate. I would dig that way more than, let's take down the Confederate flag. Still got Pitchfork Ben Tillman statues up all around here. And Strom Thurmond. Much obliged, our black mother in South Carolina, Strom Thurmond. Yes, cowbell. The voting thing, that is happening in a number of different regions with the redistricting. The purity with, I don't even know where to begin. Like, wow. Not that I'm surprised that a white person, woman or man, making a comment like that, but white genetic annihilation. That's the sort of comment that I would expect from someone who maybe has white genetic annihilation on her mind. Brain computer. Dr. Welsing moment for sure. Let's see. The quinceañera. I don't even know. Like, yikes. That's a workplace situation too. So you got someone racially ambiguous maybe. I guess they're non-white, so-called Latina. I guess. You look scary. Your mama, my nigga. Is that appropriate language for the quinceañera? So that's something like a workplace? Like, man, I just put that in my workplace scrapbook and keep it moving. Like, man, I don't even, is this just the same thing like when white people watch Friday and all the rest of it? Is that what I'm watching? Or write that one in my workplace notebook and... yeah, just keep it moving. Work from home if you can. I do realize some folks are being called. Stephen gave me whiplash. I know they said that some folks were being called back in, but then they said with the Delta variant, some people are being sent home again. Matter of fact, that was on the front page of the Seattle newspaper today. I guess I could do warts and all. Since I bragged about Seattle all the other time, and Seattle has such a low rate of pedestrian fatalities, like... man, this is one of the most embarrassing reports I've ever seen in my life. This is on the front page of the Seattle Times today. So they didn't have any good news on the front page of the paper today. So it was amid violence at Seattle Courthouse, where I just had to go 2 weeks ago. Sheriff orders staff to work remotely. Let me see if I can. Oh, I messed it up. Let me try one more time to see if I can pull it up. I just want to read the one paragraph from this. Man, that's what I said. Workplaces are generally supposed to be really killer about promoting safety. Like, everybody's supposed to sign on. We can't have people working in an environment that is unsafe, that causes all kinds of problems, difficulties. So let's see. Did I get it? I still messed up. Dang. It's being tricky in loading. I'm gonna try one more time to see if I can get it to load right now so that I can read the one portion. It never was Shangri-La, talking about the death. So the King County Courthouse is downtown, like 4th and Union, somewhere around there. All of this is downtown, close to Pike Place Market and all that. Worst part of Seattle to be. It was never Shangri-La, said Andrea R. Vitalich, a senior deputy attorney with the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office. But over the last couple of years, things took a hard dive from gritty to downright dangerous, said Vitalich. The attempted rape of a woman inside a courthouse bathroom last week was the final straw, she said, after years of escalating assaults on courthouse employees, jurors, witnesses, and others. That is an embarrassment. Things are so dangerous at the courthouse that the staff is told to work from home because a female got raped attempted rape in the bathroom last week? Like, are you serious? They even protested. They said it was so bad that they went and had a rally to march around the courthouse to demand that something be done to improve the safety conditions. Total disgrace. I said that before, like, that's the system of white supremacy where, I mean, there is no such thing as safety in a system of white supremacy. Flagrant example right there. This is the courthouse. But when you go to work, you see a situation like that, it is your responsibility. I know I'm a victim of white supremacy. Nobody values my safety. I'm going to make my safety a priority if I have to be the one who is, hey, we need to work from home until you all can make this place safe. Whatever needs to happen, speak up. That is your black self-respect because it's I can't say it enough. This is the courthouse where they're reporting this. I can't even imagine, like, McDonald's and all of it. They do have McDonald's downtown, too, not that far from the courthouse. So, Safety, super important. We've heard that word twice today already. Very critical word for anybody, regardless of what your field or career is. Let's see. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. As I said, updates. Let us know if you have dialed in and shared about a situation, and certainly let us know the COVID-19 situation. Are they taking it seriously? Are they talking about vaccines? Are they pressuring vaccines? Is this a non-starter? Are people walking around that we're not doing that here? We're not doing the mask again. Let us know what it's looking like in your specific area, because, wow, it is changes every 5 minutes, it seems. Person who dialed in, 5640, last four digits, 5640. If you have commentary, should be with us as well.
Hello. Hey, hi, Gus. I have a question about the use of the N-word in the workplace, but used by blacks. Did not the non-Clemson grad say that it was a black person that used that the N-word?
I thought he said this was a quinceañera. If my Espanol is not too shabby, these were so-called Latinos, but there was the question mark. Now, does that mean these are white people, non-white people? Were you going to clarify, non-Clemson grad?
Hispanic, I could not tell you whether or not they were white or black. Just looking at them, I would have assumed a significant amount of them were white. But I think if you would have had a conversation with them, they would say they were Hispanic, not white, because, you know, they don't see themselves as white. But to me, either answer is going to be confusion. At the very least, Hispanic, but look white, at least to me.
Okay. Thank you. I didn't know if the person was, you know, a black person that said that. I was just going to say that in my experience at work, I have witnessed other black people actually using the N-word to refer to other black people at work. And I feel that if black, not saying all blacks, but I feel that if that becomes a phenomenon, that pretty soon, whatever EEO laws, not that the EEO really helps us that much, but EEO was at least created so that if someone used a racial slur like the N-word at work, that we could, you know, sue, you know, based on enough evidence and documentation. But I just feel, and again, I'm going by my feelings, but I don't know how else to express it. But it just seems as though if that word is just constantly used, even in the workplace by other black people, because it doesn't appear as, you know, derogatory. I just feel that maybe these EEO laws regarding that would be repealed and it just wouldn't matter anymore. And people would just start saying it and including, like non-Clemson grad said, someone who is, you know, would be normally classified as Hispanic. Because I have heard other Hispanics or people classified as Hispanic or mestizo, you constantly using the N-word as well. But I just wanted to bring that point up and just ask what your view is on that, Gus. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. It has come up on workplace racism before, second time today. I think Thomas in New York, he talked about on the program before where he worked with a black female, I believe it was, and she used that sort of language on the job, calling other black people N-word this and nigga that and blah, blah, blah. And I think he tried to speak to her privately and just, you know, say, hey, I think I wouldn't recommend using that sort of language in the workplace. And she didn't receive it too well. It's just, it's not professional in a workplace. Everything that you said is totally valid. And I've seen it where that's the way racists will use it. If you have black people who are in a workplace situation and they're calling each other nigger this, nigger that, or they say it, or even if they play music that has that word in it. It might not even be that people are verbally saying it themselves, but they're playing, you know, whatever it is throughout the day. And the music is saying it. And so white people I've seen will take that as license that, hey, we use slang here all the time and we just joke around. You all say it all the time. So, you know, we could say it too, that type of a thing. I totally agree. But I mean, hey, it's non-white people are very confused about racism. And even us saying it, that is an indictment of racist man, racist woman, racist child. That's what they've called us. That's, you know, the culture that they have immersed us in the system of white supremacy, that's how we think of each other. That's how we talk and all the rest of it. So they're to blame. But I mean, when you have victims where we haven't been taught, it's not like most of us have had an opportunity to sit down with Dr. Welsing and go over the importance of being serious and professional in the workplace and have Dr. Kanban sit down and give us a tutorial about all this. Most of us haven't had that. So you just have lots of folks who, you know, and even you could be fired for that sort of thing with the environment that we have right now. Like just talking that way in a work environment, they could come and say that, hey, we heard you using racial slurs in a workplace and we don't tolerate that sort of language. Like, I don't see any way where that's going to be of any benefit, where that's going to help. I mean, talk about solving problems without creating new problems. Like, all of that, speaking in that manner in a workplace, I've just seen where generally it's just going to produce, has the potential to produce a wide variety of problems. You get in trouble for not being professional, can spark conflict because some people don't like being referred to in that manner in the workplace. Some people don't even want to hear that sort of language in the workplace. It could offer, or white people could use that as a lame excuse to practice racism and then try and say that you know, hey, you don't have a problem. You say this all the time. So, yeah, I discourage it. I wouldn't engage in that behavior myself. If other black people were doing that around me, we've had some people who tried to pull them aside privately and just encourage professional conversation. Or you can even take it the other route. I think Mr. Fuller said this one, if you work with black people and they do this when it's just black people around, and then when white people join, they stop. You can ask one day again privately, like, hey, I notice you all are, you know, nigga this and nigga that and blah, 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 when it's just us. And then when Mr. Johnson, Helen, Miss Rice, when they come in, all that stops. Like, you don't believe in saying the same way? You don't keep it real with Miss Rice? Like, what's the problem? Now, see, even that sort of thing can get people there. If you can be courteous and professional for Miss Johnson, Miss Rice, all the rest of them, the white employees of the company, you don't think it's important to be professional with the black people. We're just niggers to you. Now, even that, to get, you know, some people, to get them to start thinking like, Now, some people have said, hey, Gus is talking crazy. That's the waste of time. That can promote conflict with other victims of racism, and that's true too. I've seen that happen. Get out of here, nigger. They might even call you a nigger for bringing that up. I've seen where that happens too. So you have to kind of pick your battles, see if you have a rapport with that person. Is what I just said, is this going to cause more problems? Is this going to be something where we end up brawling and cursing each other out because I was trying to get them to be professional? Or are they really going to hear what I'm, you know, trying to present? Like, yeah, maybe I should be a little bit more professional in the workplace and not call black people niggers. Yeah. White people are most to blame.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
No, absolutely. I echo that. It, white people, yeah, they're to blame for this. No, I appreciate it. And I hope it didn't sound like I was trying to, like, get on or attack other black people. I just wanted to express, and I'm not saying you were saying that. I'm just, you know, I just wanted to express, you know, what I had observed in the workplace and what you, you know, the feedback you provided is spot on. And thank you. And I know for me, if I ever hear that referred, you know, if someone refers to me or even says that in my presence, that's another black person, definitely, you know, a white person. But, you know, if it's another victim, namely a black person, I'll just tell them, look, that language is just very offensive to me. Please don't use that in my presence. So thank you.
Much obliged. Much obliged. Yep. That's the way that I took it. It's, yeah, it's unfortunate. All I can say is very common. I don't know about during this whole past year and a half, since some people at least have been at home and on Zoom and chatting. And I know there have been reports, both people who've called in to report and reports have been written about how that also has kind of eroded some of the professionalism, because people are emoji and all the rest of it on texts and everything. So, yeah, I would just, it's not necessarily about promoting being prudish in the workplace, just some standards of professionalism about how we treat each other, and even the anti-black component, because I can't think of too many, like, I don't think people are going to be too reckless in, you know, throwing around slurs for so-called gay people, queer, lesbian, whatever. I don't think they're going to be doing that too casually in a workplace. I don't hear about that too often. Or throwing around slurs for white people, I never hear about that in the workplace. Throwing around slurs for black people, all the time. Other white people, other non-white people, all, we've heard two of them today already. We haven't even, well, we've done about half a program, hour and a half, and a good chunk of that was the audio clips. All the time. That right there, that, none of that in the workplace, really anywhere, but especially in the workplace, I would be all about. We're supposed to be professional. This is not professional to speak in this manner. And even depending on, you know, who's there, this also can potentially jeopardize workplace safety. There are a number of incidents where the use of this sort of language has provoked conflict and a toxic work environment and all the rest of it. It would just depend on, you know, circumstances, if I need to say that. But at minimum, professionalism. Always be about professionalism, safety in the workplace. Number again, 720-716-7300, the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see, retired firefighter. Wait a minute, I got confused. The emails came a little faster than I thought, so I'm going to be gangster and make sure I get through all the emails, and then we'll hit retired firefighter. Well, not all of them, just one right now. All right, so we got two different from one of our investors, our vegan attempted mother. She writes in, here's the scenario. I was referred to do a lecture on nutritional health, food insecurity, and obesity. It's for a class of nurse practitioner students. The lecture will be 45 minutes to an hour long. I asked the person coordinating this if I will be compensated. She said I will not be paid. However, she stated that I can use this lecture on my resume and that I can have access to Yale's library. I looked up who has access to the library, and it's just for Yale's staff and students. This made me consider it. I do love access to a quality library. I bet Yale has all kinds of goodies. I have a question for the listeners and callers. Would you do this lecture and why? If I do the lecture, I'll let you know, so if there's any students or person in need of information from the Yale library, they can contact me. Depends on how much time I have. I know I will find 3 or 20 things that I would appreciate getting my hands on. This is one I would have to consider. Now, it's 45 minutes. I certainly would have to consider mission creep. So this starts out, it's just supposed to be a 45-minute lecture. This cannot spill over into, ooh, you need to package this and make a video out of this and do this 5 more times this month. So this is a hit it and quit it. One-time thing. 45 minutes, bang, out. Okay. Now I can put it on my resume. Okay. Access to the Yale Library. I am a little bit of a nerd. I do like getting access to a nice Ivy League library. They have lots of resources, like reviews and articles. Dr. Curry might have a new report or all kinds of little goodies that you can. Sometimes they have whole books that you can get for free and out of print material. So that's probably, I'll compensate because I'm probably a little more excited about that than I should be. So we'll downplay that. So you get the Yale access to the library and you put it on your resume. seems like it would be something else. But if I had the time, I'd also have to counterbalance that too. Like, I am a mom, so I could be parenting, breastfeeding, cooking for myself, my family. It's 45 minutes. Do I think if I put this information, that she already said she could put this information together and share with other victims, I could do this and do it again for the hopes that if I get the opportunity to do it again, like, hey, I did this once for free, like, come on. Compensation, and then I'll have already done the groundwork. Bam, it'll be easier if I get a chance to do it again. I guess. What do people think? Yay, nay. Do you do this? It's 45 minutes. No financial compensation. You get the Yale Library access. You can put it on your resume. Is that enough to give up 45 minutes for free to do a presentation on nutritional health and obesity? Yay or nay? What do we think? Folks spectating. You had a victim who asked the direct question. Nobody has an opinion. Yay, nay. Would you do it? Yay, nay.
What was the question?
We have a medical professional. She's been asked to do a lecture on obesity, food insecurity, nutritional health. It's going to be a little less than an hour. She will not get financial compensation, but she will get access to the Yale Library, and she can add this to her resume. Would you do this? No financial compensation, 45-minute presentation, or would you decline?
I don't see anything wrong with it. If having access to something and she thinks that has a level of value in her future to give this lecture, I will wonder on how comfortable she is in giving lectures, and that would make it easier to answer, to give an answer or suggestion, is how comfortable she is in giving lectures. And if they are not giving compensating by money, but they're compensating by something that can be invested into her career. I don't see anything wrong with it, but depends on how comfortable she is also in giving a lecture.
That's interesting.
Has the person ever been compensated for giving a lecture before?
I don't know. We didn't get that information. I guess, Vegan RD, if you've done any lectures before, you can let us know. And if so, if you were compensated, that sort of thing. And going kind of tying in with retired firefighters' commentary, where he said, hey, do you have experience? I guess if I was going to, I'll say tofu back on that. If you don't have experience, Vegan RD, that might be a reason to do this so that you can get experience. Because as she said, you could put it on your resume. So at least your resume says you do have experience doing this. Even if this is your first time, you have done this before. So you can get more practice giving lectures. Now, if you have already done this, you have already got your PowerPoints out and slides and everything. This is something that you've done dozens and dozens of times for compensation. Well, then I would like, hey, meh. I don't need any public speaking practice. I'm compensated well for this, generally speaking. And no, you're not getting a free, lecture out of me. But yeah, if you don't have any, experience with this, I would say do it. Because if you mess it up, who cares? It's free and it's still going on your resume and you got some practice. I guess folks can let me know if I'm, not being logical in processing. But yeah, since that was brought up, I think, logically by both of you, I'd say, if you don't have any experience, do it and get some experience. Any other thoughts? Should she do this? Yay, nay? Maybe she'll let us know if she's done it before. We'll see if folks maybe think about it and give us a thought. If I get any more details, I'll share that also. Was any other comments you were going to give to us? Retired firefighter, first time hearing from him this week.
Yeah, I was going to basically give a historical similarity to one of the latest reports that was brought up about a non-white black person using the term nigger on the job. It's my background, and I mentioned it on the program before, where a coworker I observed at a what they call a battalion meeting, to place that in some sort of reference that everybody that works on a job is familiar with. You know, every now and then you have a meeting by everybody in your area, you know, about, you know, it could be about anything, about maybe some kind of new method of doing something, or something about payment or insurance, medical insurance or whatever, that sort of thing. They call in the fire department, they call them battalion meetings, where literally the whole battalion, a certain number of stations meet in the same area. And in this particular case, the racial issue was black male, and I noticed he had a gorilla mask heading into the station for this meeting with all of these other stations. And I quickly asked him, "Can I talk to you? Can I talk to you personally?" And I stated to him that I did not want to have to go into this meeting and do anything that would be considered to be defending him by having this mask, based on some of the things that I was thinking about could take place by him wearing this gorilla mask. And I asked him, "Can you please don't take that in there and put that mask on your head?" He thought about it for a few seconds. It did take long, and decided, you know, that's probably not the smartest thing I can do. That's always at least, not saying that you would be successful. You get a successful action to it like I did, because that was somewhere around, it was somewhere in the late 80s, early 90s. And, you know, during that time, you know, it wasn't that the level of that type of language on the job out of black people was not as prevalent, I would say, as it possibly is today. But it's worth attempting, trying. And by the idea of you asking to talk to the person and asking to talk to them personally, it's kind of like raising the bar on the level of good intent that you have. You know, in other words, I'm not trying to argue with you or anything, or on your choice of words and whatnot. I just like to have this discussion, you know, with you privately. And they may, you know, kind of like consider that non-white person. I'll put it that way. Otherwise, if they're doing it in my workplace, if they're doing it in my workplace and doing it on a consistent level, I would not feel bad after I've already had that conversation with that person. I would not feel bad about going through the process that it takes for them to stop doing it. I would not feel bad about doing it and wouldn't care so much about what the action would be on their behalf. you know, because of the discussion of the prior discussion that I attempted to have with that person. There's absolutely no reason why some of constructive where somebody would do that. And it's only going to make a difficult situation. It could be a catastrophe. I put it that way. Somewhere between a catastrophe and things not really going, it's going to definitely going to make things worse on the workplace. And that's it.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. To the specific point that he said, like, hey, I talked to this person. Now, he said, hey, in my example, it worked out well. That's not always going to happen, but hey. And I said, hey, if you have a rapport, yeah, try it. You don't have to go through white people. If you can talk to this victim directly and they will change their behavior, bravo. That's what we want. Maybe you don't have that rapport. You can still try it. Go talk to them. Please don't wear that mask. Can we please work, try to be a little bit on the professional side and how we talk to each other? You don't run around here and, you know, faggot this and cracker that, right? So why are we running through nigga this and nigga that? You could try that approach, you know? They might say, get out of here, coon. Talking to me, messing around. I talk how I want. You're not the boss of me. Get out of here. Okay. You can still get that behavior stopped. And exactly what he said, I agree with the logic. Talking like this is probably going to make things worse. As I said, I'm not aware of any examples where you're going in and talking in that way in a workplace environment. That's how you shoot up the corporate ladder. You want to get all your raises and promotions and extra vacation time and bonus PTO. Go in there, nigga this, nigga that, nigga this, nigga that. That's how you really impress white people on the job. I've never heard that. I've heard the exact opposite. So, yeah, we want to promote a professional work environment. White people know how to get that sort of thing stopped. So, yeah. And you can even say, like, hey, I'm trying to address this with you, but I think this is really important. I don't think that this sort of language should be used here. And personally, I think it might cause problems for both you, me, other non-white people, specifically black people who work here. So I am going to work to see that we can have a professional work environment. Everybody, you too, you should have a professional work environment. You don't want people running around here. And I mean, that might be another way to take it. Like, I know you would not enjoy a work environment where other people went around here behaving like you, especially if those other people were white and they were running around doing exactly what you do. And that's probably going to happen at some level. Like, it's not your fault. Again, white people are most to blame for why even the person that retired firefighter. Now, why is a black male running around with a gorilla mask in a job situation, in a fire department, no less, where we're supposed to be all about serious safety and all that? I know they have games and all the rest, but I mean, why am I in a fire department with a gorilla mask to go entertain white people? Even that.
Attention, deprecate.
White people are most to blame. And what I said before, the same corrupt logic as to why we run around, nigga this, nigga that, nigga this, nigga that, nigga this, all that. Why would I be thinking, identifying myself with a gorilla? Usual suspects all the way. But that notwithstanding, you can go to the usual suspects to get that stopped. Like, if the person, I'm going to do what I do and you're not about, okay, I will go talk to the boss. And I said before, I'd even let them know, like, if we can, I'm trying to squash this with us, but if I can't, I'm going to have to go talk to white people, because I do think it's important to have a professional work environment. Exactly what I said before. It'd be the same thing if it was music. Nobody is, you know, saying nigger this and all the rest of it, but they're playing whatever. Lil' Kim or Kanye West or whatever. Go right on down the line. And it's got all that filth, Lauren, felt, and rah, rah, rah. Hey, let's go ahead, not have any music, or pick music without all of that filth in it. Something that if our corporate CEOs come in, we don't have to, hey, turn it off. No. We want to have music that can be on and we have it at the same level. We listen to the same music when the CEO is here, when the custodial staff is here, when the secretaries are here. Everybody is functioning in a professional way at all times. Not, wait a minute, once the white people leave, oh, da, 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 whoa, 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 whoa. So we're going to be professional for the white people, and then when they're not here, now we just treat each other terribly and talk any old kind of way. Nope, that is not acceptable. I do not sign on that at all. If we're going to be professional for white people, let's be professional for everyone.
Gus, you know the only place, even after you go through that codification, where you probably would have problems personally with another employee, non-white black employee, where you would have problems at? In the NFL or the NBA, in the locker room. You probably would have consistent problems then in that locker room with that guy that you had that conversation with.
I have heard that, and within this exact context, because I think that did happen with the NBA where they were trying to stop them from saying nigger. Exactly. That was it, because they got mics everywhere now on the court, so they pick up all that stuff. And that was a big problem in the bubble, because the fans normally drown out at least a good, like, more than half of it. You'll miss a lot. You can read lips and you'll see, but I mean, you're not here. But when they disappeared, like, woo, it was games and games of games of nigger and filth. But they have been trying to, white people have been trying to do something about this at the NBA for a long time. And exactly as he said, like, lots of pushback, like, tell us how to talk. Hey, and especially with the NBA, like what I just said, it's cameras everywhere here now. Like, this is not private at all. Like, nothing about this. That's the way I would approach it. That's the way I would approach it everywhere. But I mean, in the NBA, it's flagrant. Like, do you see these cameras? Like, hey, I am not trying to lose any money. I'm not trying to be fined. And the same thing. We're going to be professional. We can get this money. You all say whatever you need to when we are at home and you're not on camera. And especially there, because you see too many instances where somebody got in trouble because they said this or said that, and they're trying to fine you or get some money from you or whatever. Like, no, you're not going to hear me saying anything. What did my man say? Both teams played hard. Both teams played hard. That's all it's going to be. It's none of that. That way I get all of my corporate money, my sponsors. It will never be any sort of, oh my goodness, the filth, Florent. Same thing for the work environment. Like, it's cameras in many of these work environments now, and Alexa and all the rest of it. I mean, even beyond how, like, we've had people who've talked about it, how they, on a personal level, this is not a part of my code. This is not how I talk about other non-white people. It's 2021. We just went through all that nonsense about, let me make sure I'm cautious. George Floyd was just killed. You had a lot of racist nonsense in response to, oh my goodness, and Breonna Taylor, and we got to have meetings in the workplace, and watermelon for Juneteenth. We just went through all of that. So you have in a lot of work environments. This is an easy one. We're not going to promote any black people. We're not going to give black people any raises. We're not going to hire any black people. But we will celebrate Juneteenth, and we will have an explicit policy. If anybody is caught here saying the N-word, you're going to get in trouble. And that might be anybody. So it's lots of different. It's no constructive way. Like, the only people that I could see who would be doing that, like you said, people in the NBA, many of the NBA players, especially now, are very young, like teenagers, 20-year-olds. I would expect very young people who are very confused about racism, white supremacy, because, I mean, there is nothing attached to this that this is going to help me grow my brand or sell some products or get a raise or a promotion or nothing. Even for an NBA player, none of that. Being professional. You are a professional basketball player and professional all the rest of it. Conduct yourself as a professional, especially when you got cameras all around. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, the number again is 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-#. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I would be in favor, like I didn't before. I don't think white people should be like suspending or punishing in a punitive manner black people, but like I do think there should be tremendous work in eroding that. Like, white people are most to blame, but like all levels, like referring all of that, oh, that's a term of endearment and all of that, especially in a work environment. Like, oh, that is so unprofessional and unacceptable to talk to and talk about other black people in that sort of manner. And again, the contrast, we don't do that to other groups, non-white people, white people. That's not that just the Negro where that's some sort of cool. I would be losing out on something in life if I couldn't refer to a black person as a Negro. The sickness of white supremacy. Curve back to the email. Get through these. Let's see. Different investor wrote in a recent job-related email exchange. I abbreviated and edited the actual emails. Female racist suspect supervisor. I have received a complaint from a coworker that a coworker under your supervision, the person she is speaking about is non-white, has done something which is problematic and violates a generally accepted practice in our corporation. The actual email was quite long. Before responding, I thought things through for a few days. I'm just putting a pin right there. Now, earlier in the same broadcast today, one of our different investor, Rachel R.D. Vegan, she said when she made an error in terms of her codification, she said they were rushing her. They were speeding her up, so she got distracted and she couldn't really process in the way that she normally does to make excellent decisions. Here, he said, before responding, I thought things through for a few days. You won't always have that much time to invest in making a quality decision, but wow, that is awesome. Like, that is a luxury to be able to take that much time to make a response. Let's see what he came up with. Remembered, stay in the question lane. We talk about that a lot, I believe. My response, when you say generally accepted practice, is this part of the written policy and procedure? Dynamite. Moreover, can you provide me with details, names, dates, and records, documentation, that's how they do it, of the event such that I can inform myself about what occurred? Female racist suspect supervisor. I am not sure if this is a part of the written policy and procedure. Uh-oh. We are looking into it. We can stop right there. You lying wench. I'm just calling lie right there. White people, and particularly this sounds like a really high up corporate white person. You can check me if this is just the janitor staff or whatever. But she already knows the policy and procedure. And if it was, she would have done it the same way that Gus has told you all to do it. You go to the meeting, you already know it's in the policy and procedure because I got the page and paragraph highlighted. I'm just waiting until it's my turn to speak so that I can read this attached to a question. Why don't you just say, no, it's not part of policy and procedure, but you could just say that, right? You're white, you make up the rule, or we're adding it to policy and procedure today. You couldn't even do that. It's got to be some tacky, I'm not sure all this head scratching. I'm not sure if it's part is in the written policy and procedure. We're looking into it. I do not have the details of this event and cannot provide you with that information. Like, what? You want... If it should occur in the future, I will provide you with those details. Are you flipping serious? He continues with the email. I did not feel the need to respond further. I thought this was an effective use of the principle. Stay in the question lane. Brilliant. Brilliant. Now, she started off sounding like Marsha Clark in the O.J. Simpson trial metaphor. She's breathe and fight. This is not part of our generally accepted practice in corporation. You got this problematic Negro on your team. He's not doing what he's supposed to do. And, oh, you wait till we get you on. Well, wait a minute. What part of the policy and procedure did this violate? You know, we will get back to you. Just give us a little time. This is common in the workplace. I can only tell you. And why it is so important, your composure. White people have a lot of power when they come with these accusations. Like, man, sometimes it is scary. Like, we've had all this stress the past year and a half or whatever it's been at this point. And they start coming with all this and all that anxiety, and palms might start sweating. You're breathing a little bit more heavily. And whew, just the importance, even if you can't take a few days. I mean, this is brilliant. Be able to get a few days to just let me calm down, think this through. Even if you can only get a few hours, you do the exact same thing. Let me slow down and just get to the basics. What was the violation of policy and procedure? I have my manual, so I want to know exactly what policy breach we're talking about. That's just the basics. And then we go from the line. He said it was a lengthy email. See, that's what they'll do. They'll hit you with all of that. We want to inform you that this matter is serious and you are responsible. And they have went on for 5 pages. Well, okay, I got it. It's serious and I might be in trouble. Like, whoo, I might have raped a white woman here. What is the violation of policy and procedure? You don't know. You don't. It might not even be about. Oh, okay. You'll get. Okay. Well, you get back to me. Thank you so much for your assistance. They do this sort of thing. I mean, this is even a double whammy because this one could have wasted a whole lot of time. Like, this could have went bad in so many ways. Like, if he gets upset, what do you mean? I violated. Like, he could have got upset, right? And it goes that way. The person, whoever this non-white person is who allegedly did whatever, he could have got upset and came in and fussed, you know, at the person who wrote this email. What are you doing listening to these folks? And I ain't doing anything. And then they get into, like, this could have exploded in a myriad of different ways. How did he diffuse it? Asking, like, 2 questions. And that's all she wrote. That's all we needed. 2 questions. Maybe could have just used the 1. Because if you don't even know if this is a violation of policy and procedure, like, maybe you can email me back when you all have edited the policy and procedure, which would then necessitate like a group meeting to alert everyone that now this is no longer permissible according to the newly updated policy and procedure. Just asking, that is one of the best tools in the universe. Just asking questions, being in that frame of mind, especially when you're in the workplace and especially when you're talking to white people. Although I have found using questions is equally effective. Well, it works very well. I'll put it that way. It can work very well even with victims of white supremacy. I found that, I'll put it this way, asking questions tends to work much better than making statements with victims of racism. I'm not going to say it's perfect, but hey, a lot of times when you're just making statements, people can wait around to just disagree and nitpick about what you said and your vocabulary or your grammar was incorrect, that sort of thing. You're asking, and the other brilliant thing with a question, you're giving up the floor. Generally, once you ask your question, you're done speaking. You're waiting for the response. So I'm yielding the floor, and you get to talk. Like, everybody loves that. Man, I wish this coon would shut up so I can talk. Well, your wish is granted. This is my question. Da-da-da-da. Is this in policy and procedure? And then you can hush and let them talk. That's why I found it works really well with victims, all better than statements, just having to listen to you drone on and on and on and on and on. And they don't agree with what you said anyway, because you're a nigger too. That's what they're thinking about you. That's what we've been talking. That's what they're thinking. Oh, I wish this nigger would shut up. That's what they're thinking about you. That's the way we've been brain trashed by the system of white supremacy and what we're trying to correct. Anywho, bravo to our investor. Ask question and your composure. I can't emphasize that enough as well. Keeping your composure, asking questions. Those are like critical. And policy and procedure, too. That's another big one that's kind of undergirding all this. Make sure you've read it in advance. So you're just kind of checking back to see, you know, what's there. Make sure I get an update on this. And I might have forgotten, you know, what's on page 52 or whatever it is. But brilliant effort, sir. Brilliant. The number again, 720-716-7300, the code 564-943 pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Just rumbling through all of our little emails here, untiljustice@gmail.com. If you have other thoughts, suggestions, what have y'all, keep an eye on my email as we proceed. I see our caller in Florida. As I said, like last week, so much got piled up at the end of the program. It was stunning. Like, I was like, we could have did overtime easily last week because it was so much that piled like in the last 5 minutes of the broadcast. So these were things that were said as the door was closing on the broadcast last week, where it was like, wow, we should have spent a little bit more time. Like, that's so important. So this was one of the things that aired last week as we were closing.
As far as the COVID-19 at my mom's, where she worked at in that building, the criminal courthouse, she didn't come into work the first 2 days, and then found out on the Wednesday, this past Wednesday, when she came in, someone had tested positive, and that person wasn't there. So her and another person had to leave. So it was only her and the supervisor doing customer service. So the thing is, they have to have their PTO extracted. The people who was close to the person who either tested positive or was exposed to COVID-19. So that's something that some employers are upset about, and I want to mention that because I took a picture of the calendar where my supervisor, I think, is an arch deceiver, racist, because she is involved in the way that the wording she used is, this white man has been exposed to COVID-19. So him and two other white women, right, who all are part of the group chat, of course, were told to go home. So now I just said that they have this policy where employees have to use their own PTO. If they are told to go home, if they've been in contact, they hadn't done anything but just be in contact with someone who's been exposed. They sat next to them, et cetera. So these three people been given the option to work remotely, right? And it's all on the cell phone picture. So now these are all white people, of course. But I'm starting to think, what if they're going to be examples to where there are possibly some black people told to go home, and they've been in proximity to someone who's been exposed, and they don't get that option to work from home. And the reason they're doing this, I think she's given, obviously accommodating white staff so that they don't have to lose their hours. But other staff are going to lose theirs. They happen to go home. Because there's a black female that just started, and I haven't seen her in 3 weeks. So I'm hearing that she has COVID. So the most powerful white person, he sent out an email saying, hey, you know, we're going to have to go back to wearing these masks, CDC guidelines. You know, Florida is real high and severe with these COVID-19, the Delta variant cases. So I've been wearing the mask ever since we reopened and stopped the drive-through, right? So I just wanted to share that. There is some more I wanted to share on the COVID-19, but I think racism.
Context of white supremacy. So that was cut deliberately in that manner. Our caller in Florida did not, he didn't give a sentence fragment in that manner. He was saying that he had more to say on COVID-19, but racism, and I thought that was an excellent fade out, because I used to, I did deliberately give that fragment. That's how the context of white supremacy became the title for this broadcast so many years back. Frequently, I would give some sort of statement. We'd be talking about this or that and say, but in a system of white supremacy, or in the context of white supremacy, and it would just be kind of like fade out. Nothing else really needed to be said. And I felt the same effect there. But racism and, yeah, nothing else really needed to be said. Like, that kind of dominates and disrupts everything. Anywho, but I thought that was so important because, like, I suspect that that's happening, like, on a really broad scale. I am very sure that that's not just Northern Florida, where some racist is in charge of scheduling. And so they can say, well, hey, we'll make the discretion. Talk about that all the time. We heard that even with Rachel earlier today, one of our investors, right? She said, hey, they hooked up some of these other black people. They have jobs that they can't even do at home, and they got work from home. You know, hooked me up with one day and gave me all this finger wagging. It's going to be temporary and all this other stuff. You can change the rules. You can do what you need to. So he reports at the courthouse, hey, some white person in charge of scheduling, click member probably. We'll hook up the white folks here, like Sally and Bill. They can go home, use some of their work from home so they can save all their PTO. And that's come up repeatedly, these racist shenanigans with the PTO at the courthouse, right? Where he talked about they had some white person before and they were all pooling PTO hours and pressuring people. Come on and share some of your PTO with Billy. He's got children and all the rest of it. Black people like, hey, you can't do that. You can't do that. We can't do any of that sharing PTO and all that. Cut that out. Get in trouble for that. Like these sort of things. They'll let the white people, they can work from home, save their hours, and still get their paycheck to support themselves, their family, alcoholism, drug habit, whatever else they're doing. Black people, he said, man, they got to be struggling, like using their PTO. And particularly, he said, this is a black person that's a new hire, so they don't even have PTO accrued at this point, presumably, if you're a new hire. Struggling. Oh, well, maybe that means you don't get a paycheck. Tough nookies. We all just got to do the best we can. That's why it's so, and he said he got a picture, like, that's what I mean about being observant. Like, that's not anyone going around and nigger this and racist joke per se, but I mean, wow, that exactly what subversive activity right there. And it is racism, white supremacy. If the white people are getting this hookup where they can work from home and the black people, they got to struggle and stride and, you know, do the best they can to try to get through, make do in a terrible situation times like 20. And as I said, I'm sure that's not a Florida thing. That's not a U.S. thing. That's probably a worldwide, known universe thing. Well, white people do this sort of nonsense. That's what, be observant, particularly if you can hook up and get some friends who work close to or in the scheduling department where that happens, where they can be looking out, listening out for this type of thing. Like, I would want to be super informed and attentive about that, because I mean, wow. And as I said, that's subversive activity. Violation of the Constitution, supposed to be equal protection of the law. Exactly what Mr. Fuller talks about, the 14th Amendment. Our caller in Florida, who's that? That's why I said this was at the close of last week as he was going out. I don't know if we got an update on that or any other juicy tidbits. He should be with us also.
Yes, sir. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, listeners and callers. I'm glad that you played the audio, because it was very important that I get that picture, because see, the thing with that calendar, right, is that say if I were to ask a question about it, see, she could come back and like modify it or delete it or something, you know. So hey, I didn't do such a thing, because you just never know what kind of shenanigans and what kind of racist acts that a white person will engage in. But the three people, they sat close to one another. And on last Thursday and Friday, they, I got the news that they were all out. So they were out just for those 2 days. and they returned on Monday. I guess the main person at the center of it, he tested negative or whatnot. So, and the reason I want to also begin with that is another part that stems from this is on last Friday, another white woman that's a part of the chat, I was helping to take a photograph of someone for the passport. So I had to change up a picture. So I brought the second picture I took to her, and she was saying, sorry, it took me a while to respond. I was on the phone. I was trying to help set up somebody. I'm trying to think of how she said it. She was trying to help, and she named the person that works there, one of the people that was supposed to be quarantining. I'm trying to help her set up an app for the program that we use here. I'm trying to get her set up. See, she's trying to help her set up the program to do the work from home. So I said, that's interesting. So she said, but thank you for the pictures. So, you know, I wrote that one down. And now this is the same person that she's helping on the phone was talking about her to the black female a few weeks ago, if I shared it or not. I think they are experimenting on the black female. And speaking of that, the supervisor, she was asked at least maybe a month or two ago about working from home, working remotely. Usually they've been supplying these laptops. And the black female asked, are we still doing this work remotely thing? You know, have everybody brought back their laptops? And she was like, yeah, everyone's brought back their laptops. We're not supposed to be working from home and anything like that. But that's just a blatant lie, because they even have a person that retired at the end of 2018. They still, I found out, they have a retired white woman helping them do a particular task. I guess it's indexing or something like that. So I'm thinking they're obviously paying her to do that, compensating her for that. But they don't like to share that kind of information. You just kind of hear that on random talking or whatever. So they obviously practice some racism in that way, because I don't hear that they are giving a black person that kind of benefit or opportunity. As far as this week, I wanted to share some updates. The first is the black male that works as the court director and the black female that is the civil supervisor, these same particular white women, they are even becoming worse in terms of wanting to go speak to the warden. And they say that they are writing a list of different things that they need to talk about to the lady I call the warden, the white woman. So, but what was interesting was that, and I think some of these may be in the word guide, the words that have some association with blackness and darkness. The first one was this white woman used these terms, these three different phrases or terms. She said that they are trying to blackball you all, right? So I guess that's a Wilson moment, maybe. And she was, I guess, talking about that in the context of they're treating this particular white woman incorrectly. So they're trying to make it look like they're victims still. And the second one was they referred to the warden as these two people, top black people in the dark, keep the warden in the dark, right? And the third one was, as she was, she asked the younger white female if she was going to be wearing her mask, because she remembering to put on her mask. I still got to remember to do it because they have me on the blacklist. All right. So she said that walking out of the break room. And another piece to that was the black male was mentioned. And I think they just upset because the warden and the person over her have been, I guess, given the black male the okay to kind of discipline them a little more, like be stern through the emails and write up people and, you know, I guess use a little more power given to him, not that he can project off or do, you know, put forth himself. This white woman who's been working there, I guess, about 30 years, she was up in a trial and she, I guess, needed some kind of a battery or something like that. She needed a battery from her backpack in her office. So she said she texted the black male downstairs where we are on the first floor, I guess outside of the courtroom or whatever. And she wanted him to get the battery for her or something and bring it upstairs. And she said he might have saw this notebook she had with something written on it, written in it, a bunch of list of things that she said, because I have a list of things I need to talk to. I'll just insert the warden. I have a list of things I need to talk to the warden about. So I guess it was things written about him. So I guess he must have seen it and he must have was acting, I guess, different. That's from what she said, that he had a difference in behavior or whatever. So I found that interesting. I have three more things. This next one is there was an incident that happened this week, right, where it's a black male, and it's definitely it includes anti-blackness, because he made a report apparently because he was coming to the courthouse and ordering files, and he was ordering old files from the archives, and he's been looking at a lot of files going back to his 30s, right? So they're talking bad about this guy. Unfortunately, my black female coworker was speaking about him in an incorrect way, you know, saying that he gets on my nerves, and I'm like, I don't see what's wrong. Why the hostility? So that's what I'm thinking in my mind. So this guy, I guess he had been coming in almost every day, frequently, but he's just looking at files. That's really the thing. So I guess it comes up to this past Tuesday, and things really, I guess, get out of hand, you can say, because he apparently, from what I was told, he was mistreated, I guess, so much, talked to incorrectly by this victim, okay? And he calls back up to the courthouse to, as they say, make a complaint about this person's customer service skills or lack thereof toward him. And he reported to remain anonymous. So he's speaking to the warden, of course. And from what I remember, the chain of events happening, she told the black female to come into her office, right? And then she comes back out after about 10 minutes. And then the white woman, the warden, brings out a sticky note, like she's written something on there. So apparently it was this guy's phone number. So that already is a major violation. So she's giving this guy's number out to the person he made a report about. So I guess they must have made a connection that it was the same guy that was coming in. And so the guy gets there later on in the afternoon, And he gets this phone call, right? So her husband calls this guy. And I don't know if he got threatened or whatever, but I don't think it was a very pleasant phone call. So this guy is upset, incensed, and he goes to speak to the black male court director, and the court director goes to get the warden person, the white woman. And this is like extensive. Like, this guy, I sat and I talked with him, and he was telling me, whispering to me, like, what happened? Like, were you here yesterday? I was like, yeah, I was here, you know. And he was just telling me, you know. And the guy, he was very courteous and everything, and he said he was just, so he had to really address and confront the giving out his number. And he asked to speak to the clerk of the court. So he walked back to his office, and he wanted to be like, hey, you know, I came in here and multiple times she's mistreated me. And I guess he made an ultimatum of, you know, you either fire her or I'm going to the news media or whatever. And I think it's more to this, but that's been a real big issue this week. And now they're starting to watch this guy, and they had to move the black female to the archives, I guess, to try and make it look like she isn't working there anymore. But my thing is, the warden has committed the biggest crime by disclosing his information. So he, from what he said to me, was angry at her. Well, so we get an email today about, we need to, well, she said that our frequent, and she's definitely shown more stronger aspects of her racism, white supremacy, because she went up to the computer that the guy was using, the black guy, and she said that she's going to call the IT person to see if they can do a history on the things he looked at while he was sitting with me, you know, when I was sitting talking to the guy and I was helping him look through his files. So a lot of racism, I think, is being shown with this situation. And there's more to it, but I'll just stop right there. And thanks for allowing me to speak.
Black male privilege. North Florida courthouse. Black male privilege. Yes. All the way through, we heard the black super... black male privilege. James Brown, he said it's a man's world. Yes. Black man's world. Yes. Yes. Woof. Hurt my head. Man. Jesus Christ. So we go all the way back to the work from home, which is where we ended at last week. Like, man, but just... Number one, that's such an extraordinary violation. Like, that's why I say you really have to be observant. Like, even, you know, if it's racism related or no, just be really, really alert and aware of things that are happening. And that's why I said, we don't have time to gossip and talk about nonsense. Like, let's talk about work and things that are happening here. Like, constantly I'm trying to learn and know as much as I can about what is happening here, this place that I work. That should be the mind frame. Speaking of which, they say, well, we got some folks, are being allowed to work from home? Can we get a laptop? No. We shut all that down. We don't do all that anymore. Everybody brought the laptops back? Yeah, we're done with all that. Really? You sure? Oh, okay. Lie. And he said, you would have to know, because he said it seems like they try to conceal information, something I think Justice and many of us victims have been saying for a long time. Like, dang, they do have people out working from home. A number of people that are still out working from home. Even got this old white chick who's retired, allegedly, working from home. Has her laptop. He said it seems like that's one they don't want too many people to know about, those type of opportunities. You could earn a few nickels and maybe keep it quiet and all that. Like, that is rampant in the known universe, where those little type of hookups and incentives and opportunities, like, oh, we just squirrel this away for another white person. Let's see. And even he said he was going in and talking, and the white woman said, oh, what are you working on? What are you working on? And she says, oh, I'm just trying to get her set up. I need to get this application down so that Julie can, you know, get all of her stuff set up on the computer. Like, oh, so we do still have people working from home. I see. White people working from home. Got to make sure they get all the help they need so they don't have to burn through their PTO. Let's see. But now, I don't have my word guide with me, but I'm pretty sure Blackball is there. Keeping someone in the dark, I'm very sure that that's there, meaning this person allegedly doesn't have certain information. It's been concealed from them, treating them like a Negro. And then on the blacklist, for sure, just all down the line. And all of this attached, we've got a black male who's supposedly supervisor over these white people, racist white women, and talk about black male privilege. And they just sit around all day long and sabotage and figure out how can we get rid of him. How can we get rid of him? Like, come on. And then black male privilege, the white women in charge, they have to write an email to tell him, go ahead and crack the whip. Write him up. Write those emails. Go ahead and get on them. Got to be tough with them, see? Really? You got to have a group of white women? I mean, this is the black male we talking about. He raped 5,000 women in an hour. This is the black male. You got to tell him to be tough in an email? Black male privilege. Black male privilege. Let's see. They got a list about him. He's got to be tough on them, and he found out that they got a list on him, and apparently that changed some of his conduct. They probably got everybody in the building. Got a list on him. For sure got a list on our caller here who dialed in, going around talking about he's promoting justice. Like, he's on everybody's list. All of the niggers in the courthouse, I'm sure, are on all kinds of lists. That's what it means. System of white supremacy. Now, we've unfortunate. That's why I said most to blame. Said that when we're talking about, you know, calling each other Negro and all the rest of it. But usual suspects, most to blame. We've heard a lot of anti-blackness, even in how the non-white employees treat other non-white employees. Heard that before. Repeated, even how he gets treated at the courthouse. No surprise, then, if the non-white employees mistreat other non-white employees, certainly they're going to mistreat the patrons in the courthouse. I mean, that's standard operating procedure. And so he says, black male privilege. Black male comes in, and he's getting these files. I said, well, what has he done? Is he rude? Does he curse you out? Does he ask for copies and not have change, you know, to pay for the cut? Like, what is he doing? He's just coming in looking at files? Like, what? And even pause right there, because I'm pretty sure he had said sometime before that it was a white woman. She would come in and she would go through the archives. Want to see all about the segregation in Florida. She would come. I don't think he said she came in every day, but she would come in, do her research and all that, dig through the catacombs. Wow. Lots of racism practices. You see this? They wouldn't even sell a house to a black person and all that. I didn't hear people, or at least he didn't share with us, about people having an attitude. And, oh, man, she's always coming in here, digging through these old records, racism this and rah, rah, rah. I didn't hear that. Black male comes in, wants to look at some. Oh, my God, this guy. You're at the courthouse. This is all supposed to be about serving the citizens of the Sunshine State. Like, what? What's the problem? Like, I didn't even hear that enumerated. Like, that always stands out to me when someone, particularly anybody, when they're talking and they have an issue, a concern with a non-white person, especially a black person, and it's not attached to anything. Like, I don't know, were you all in line at the grocery store and he got the last roll of toilet paper? Like, tell me something. Like, he cut you off. He got the last parking space. Like, something. He came in without a mask on. That's what it did. He was trying to fist bump you. Just he comes to the courthouse to look at these files. And I hate his guts. Man. Woof. And he reported that. We talked about that too. We had folks who said, hey, using saying nigga this and nigga that around me at work, I'm going to report it. I'm going to go tell white people and get that stopped. He went by the same logic. Like, I'm a citizen of Florida. I'm going to the courthouse to get a legal document, court record, legal documents and what have you. What am I doing incorrect? There's no reason for me to be treated in this manner. And I suspect he's probably been treated this way regularly if they're just sitting around gossiping about him. Like, oh, God, I hate that guy. Oh, he's coming back again. Oh, isn't he the worst? Yeah, he sucks. I hate him, too. Like, man. And so he reports it. That's what you're supposed to do. I'm coming here. I'm paying your taxes. Go to your salary and what have you. Like, yeah, I make a report. They're being discourteous at the courthouse. No justice here. She should be reprimanded. Punitive action. Let's be something be said about this. As opposed to that, they come back and, hey, here's his phone number. Track him down. What? What? We're at the courthouse. Like, what is going on? When he came back next and he said, now this one, she is really a refined racist. When she talked about the computer, I was like, uh-oh, they're about to come out with a DNA swab. Like, we're going to get his fingerprints. We're going to get some DNA and go down to the police. Like, nothing would have surprised me. So for her to say, oh, yeah, I'm going to go get the IT guy. Like, we're going to find out exactly what he searched. Like, system of white supremacy. Black male privilege. Isn't that what they told us? Black male privilege at the courthouse. And I still haven't heard one thing. Like, is he looking at, like, illicit content? Does he have a record? Is this like a convicted drugs? Like, what is it? Do you have a guess? Like, what has this black fella done?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. The files he's requesting is on the current sheriff, I believe, and it has nothing to do with himself. As far as I know, I had just met the guy on Wednesday, and he was asking, like, why were certain cases from, you know, under this certain guy's name wasn't showing up on the website, because I guess they have it to where I doubt it was expunged or anything like that, or maybe it was. We have it to where the public site doesn't show certain cases. So he had to order the physical files for certain cases he was researching. I'm not sure why he's researching the person's name, but he told he says, I'm an investigator. So he says he's investigating some things under these, I guess, with something involving these cases. That's the bit that I know. And then I noticed he used, I think it was a form of codification. My supervisor walked through, and I know she was being nosy and racist. So he gets up and says, well, I'll be back, if not tomorrow, but the day after tomorrow, because it looks like they trying to watch they try to watch it. So I don't want to get you hemmed up on anything, blackmail to blackmail. So I said, well, you already know. That's how I replied to him. So they, you know, they were watching because there's cameras in the ceiling. So I'm just sitting there in a seat. Black male. So they already have me high on the list. So another black male, and we're corresponding. And I'm, for the most part, I'm just sitting there looking at the files and him. That's the policy. But she had to come walking through there. Not any other time. She doesn't want to walk through there. Like, you know, who cares? But she was coming, obviously, to watch, but she made it look like she was putting documents up. So he already knew what was going on. So it appears that the warden is being, it looks like she's worried, in my opinion, but the saga continues, I guess. I guess I'll find out what's happening next week. But, you know, the guy, yeah, he says he's an investigator. That's what he says to me.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Black male privilege. So he's looking at the files on the sheriff. Now, we do know it seems like these folks would have a leaning towards law enforcement. I don't know if the sheriff's somebody's cousin or homie, or he gets invited to the Christmas party, so maybe they have some sort of problem with that. But, I mean, if the sheriff hasn't done anything wrong, that's not grounds to, you know, be surly and discourteous when this fellow comes to the courthouse. Now, we were just talking in the broadcast. I was talking about the athletes and saying, hey, you know, as cameras and such, conduct yourself as a professional and recording devices and all the rest. And then here we go. Now we're not talking about million-dollar athletes. We're just talking about the regular old courthouse in Florida, and we still got the cameras in the ceiling. So that's why you have to have a very disciplined code about what you say, what you do, especially like, wow, if it's going to be two black males in one room at the same time and it appears you all may be courteous. He already said, like, man, I'm not going to stay too long today. I think I might get you hemmed up. Too late. Too late. And it wouldn't even be your fault. Like, the warden, like, the click, like, woof. And she comes through. He said, normally she wouldn't even want to come through this area. Avoid it like the plague. Now, I'll have to do some unjust networking. We've got black males. Keeping my eye on the black males. I'll be back through in 10 minutes and let you know if I hear anything else. Like, dang, you already got the cameras in the ceiling and you still got to walk through physically. Keeping my eyes.
I'll take a nap spot.
I'm sorry?
Oh, sorry to interrupt. I'm thinking that's why that she sent the email out today. He says, hello, research area. I just heard from, and insert the code name warden. I just heard from the warden that our free customer was yesterday, and I didn't. I think it's being deceitful again. I think she did know. She says, I just want you all to let me know when this person is here. I need to know. She used the word Nick. I just think the email was her practicing racism, and I think it's also the guy, the black guy, he says, you know what, you have excellent customer service, so he gave me a call, but they don't care about that either, so that's the.
I need to know. Now, that's another one, like, he's talked about problem clients before, people who come up there and cut a fool and threaten staff and all the rest of it. Like, wow, this person hasn't done any of that. Just come here to look up some files on the sheriff. I'm an investigator. I need to know when he is on the premises. Like, wow. Like, is it anybody else who's on the need to know list? Like, we have to have that a little alarm, send out notices. Like, he's here. He's here. He's on, like, a black male privilege. Woof. Man, oh, man. Much obliged, our caller in Florida. What a week. We have 15 minutes left, so if we have any folks, if you got missed totally and think you have commentary that you would like to share before we wrap up, 720-716-7300, the code 564-943, pound, press *61 if you would like to share before we get ready to close things out for the day. We'll be here tomorrow neutralizing workplace racism. Tomorrow's compensatory call-in. It'll be 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll catch up with what's gone down the last 7 days or so. We heard Governor Cuomo was mentioned. New York, yeah. Yeah. Tough times. Tough times all around. But we'll chat about that and much more for tomorrow compensatory call-in. Again, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Let me make sure. I didn't see any other emails. We did have our caller. If folks have any thoughts, would you do the lecture? If you're not going to be compensated financially, but you will get access to the Yale Library, and you can add this to your resume. Did we have any other opinions on whether or not you would you do the lecture? 45 minutes, would you do the lecture on food, nutrition, obesity, or decline it since you're not going to get any coin? Folks still pondering. I'll check in one more time on that one again. I would do it if I was not accomplished at public speaking, wanted to get some practice at that, get some reps that I could put on my resume. I would go ahead and do it. But anywho, again, we'll be here tomorrow. We are listener supported. Counter Racist Radio. Invest if you think the cows is constructive. Racism-notes.blogspot.com. Racism-notes.blogspot.com. PayPal button is in the top right corner. We are also at Cash App. The link should be there, but it's cash.app/$ the cows. Huge thanks to all the folks who have supported for 12 plus years. Hopefully we've offered some constructive insight on how best to go about replacing white supremacy with justice immediately. Black self-respect, hugely important. Can't say it enough in the workplace and beyond. Just model it. We talked about so much how you deal with other non-white people, black people being anti-black, non-constructive in a workplace. Dr. Welsing was such a strong advocate for modeling correct behavior and high levels of black self-respect and how you treat other black people, how you treat yourself, and you know what you're saying, what they hear coming out of your mouth on a regular basis. I think that's so important, being able to model that in the workplace and beyond. I think that also does a lot to combat that. It's like, man, I never really hear you saying, you know, nigger this and all that, and you know, you're always courteous when you talk to other black people and you don't have all these nicknames, you know, call people by their names. They're like, all right. That sticks out because it's so that goes so much against the brain trashing and conditioning that we get in the system of racism. So just can't emphasize that enough. Model quality behavior in your workplace and how you interact with the other black people. Anywho. Any other comments folks want to make sure they get in before we wrap things up? We will assume folks are good for this week. Again, we'll be here tomorrow. You can check Black Talk Radio Network Facebook page for other dates, guests, white people coming to the program for the rest of our summer. Much obliged for folks tuning in. Hope it was worthy of your Friday evening. Stay safe. With that word again, stay safe, stay hydrated. I would still encourage sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. We need a high functioning brain computer. In addition to being sober, if you're going to be out and about, I would still be very alert. There are lots of new gun owners, lots of folks who are anxious, rowdy about lots of different things. If you notice someone being hostile and rude, loud in public, they would still say this is not a time to be in verbal confrontations with strangers. You should be thinking that this fella, this gal could be armed. In fact, she may have an entire entourage of armed folks who are waiting to do harm. If you didn't leave your residence prepared to kill and or die, exit. Everything is about exit. Even I saw that this week, just randomly, some white person went out and was yelling at a black motorist as she was driving by and was calling her a nigger and was yelling after the exit. It has been way too much trauma for the past 18 months. Exit. All of that said, if you are driving, you're not on the cell phone, trying to do the small things that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no, and we need our attention. Stay alert. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
No problem. You're a victim.
Man, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.